Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 136 of Growth Marketing Today. Today, I have Tim Ash. He is the author of the new book, Primal Brain. Now, neuromarketing can help you improve your marketing campaigns, product information, and above all, possibly influence your customers' final decision to make a purchase. To help you better understand and leverage the power of neuromarketing, Tim Ash, he shares 6 neuromarketing principles to improve your conversion. In episode 136, you'll learn first, how can marketers build better experiences or campaigns, knowing that the primitive brain is lazy, impatient, and like simple choices. Second, why pain avoidance is 2 to 3 times more powerful in persuading people to purchase than positive motivation. And third, how can marketers give people the illusion of control to help them make the buying decision easier? And third, how can marketers give people the illusion of control to help them make the buying decision easier? Now, before we jump in, I've created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from Tim in a 1-page PDF. Now, why take notes when you can just take mine? I put it all together, I put in the work, so you can, just read it and apply it to your business to accelerate the growth. You can go to growthtoday.fm/136 to get it now. You can also find this link in the description of the show. So get it now before I actually take it away. When I publish next week's episode, I take this week's cheat sheet away. I also want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts like Tim on the show. Thanks to LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is an undiscovered goldmine for many advertisers. One thing I really love about advertising on LinkedIn is how you can target by very exclusive criteria that you will not find anywhere else, such as company growth rate, job seniority, job titles, skills, and more. So whether you're looking to generate leads, drive website traffic, and build brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals. Now, for you, my listeners, you get $100 free credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign. Get it for free at linkedin.com/growthtoday. Enough about me. Let's jump into my chat with Tim. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to have Tim here. He is the author of a new book that just came out, Unleash Your Primal Brain. How's it going, Tim? How are things with you?
Really good, Ramley. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I've seen your talks and it's just honored to have you on the show. I'm glad Andra introduced the two of us.
Yeah, she's an amazing lady, boy. And she's just such a bright mind and a fantastic person as well.
Now, before we jump in, I'm curious how this book came about, Unleash Your Primal Brain. Like, what was the trigger for you? Like, this needs to come out. Like, people need to learn about this.
Oh, that's a great question. As you know, this is my third book. The first couple were about digital marketing, called Landing Page Optimizations, kind of the Bible in the field. So there are 2 editions, 50,000 copies sold, 6 translations into different languages. Most of my work has been as a marketer. And for many years, I ran a conversion rate optimization agency called Site Tuners. And we created about $1.2 billion in value for companies like Cisco and Nestle and Facebook and Google and so on. And the focus on conversion rate optimization is, do people act when they get to your website? So it's that zero moment of truth. You can't fake it. And basically, most of the value that we created, most of that $1.2 billion was based on these durable evolutionary psychology principles, or I guess what you'd call neuromarketing. So I've done enough in that arena, but I wanted to really explain to people how the brain worked, not just the marketers, because I feel like we're at a disadvantage. Big companies have these, data scientists and algorithms, and they're always trying to separate us from our money or divide us politically. And I just wanted to have people be better prepared for that, so they're not bringing the proverbial knife to the gunfight. So I just wanted to explain how our brains really work. And that was my goal.
Fascinating. I saw this post on LinkedIn that the best marketing books are not marketing books, but psychology books. I'm curious if you agree with that.
100%. There can be no other answer. I mean, think about what you're talking about. Marketing is persuasion. You want to move me to act, right? To understand persuasion, you need to understand what you're trying to persuade. And that's the brain. So of course, psychology is the foundational discipline for marketing. My particular take on it is evolutionary psychology. In other words, our brains didn't just pop into being. You have to retrace the whole arc of evolution to see the traits and responses that we picked up along the way. I feel that explains a lot of stuff.
Let's talk about those traits. You know, I've seen your OmniConvert presentation, and I'll add that link in the show notes, but one of the things you talked about is that we're actually really not rational, like we think we are. Like, we're, you know, when people think about the buyer's journey or the buying decision process, you think it's like, oh, they're deciding feature A, feature B, and they do this and they do that, and then it's all rational. But you're saying that it's really not. And how can marketers take advantage of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. As you know, in traditional economics, there's this notion of somebody who's going to do things in their rational self-interest, right? If I say, okay, well, you have a 50-50 chance of double or nothing, or you have a 51% chance of winning, you know, the rational thing to do is to take the better option, right? But turns out people aren't rational at all. And traditional economics doesn't work. A lot of the recent work has been in behavioral economics. People like Richard Thaler, who's won the Nobel Prize for it. I mean, they're all talking about where traditional economics breaks down. And so there's like this 2,000-year-old plus bias in Western civilization, going back to people like Socrates, that say, well, our highest achievement is the fact that we're rational and we can tame the beasts of our lower animal nature and all of this. It turns out 95% of what we do is ruled by that irrational, subconscious, primal brain. And most of the time, the rational mind's left in the dark and is not even activated.
That's so fascinating. You're right. Like, there, you know, people are not rational. And how does that help us with optimizing conversion then, or for marketing? Like, we know that they're rational. Do we become irrational ourselves, or do we play up emotions?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you're even struggling with the word. Like, who'd want to be irrational? I mean, here in California, in San Diego, where I live, you know, we say, dude, that was so random, you know, and that's not a compliment because it's unpredictable, right? Nobody wants to be like that. But it really, I'm going to say this again, they've done brain studies. Literally, you cannot make a decision without emotions. So the rational mind can provide you with options, but to quickly narrow it down to something actionable, that's the role of emotions and automatic reflexes. So don't pretend you're rational. Knock it off.
That's so good with emotion. There was another part in that talk I really found fascinating, that you said that one of the emotion that is so powerful, even more powerful than other emotions in terms of marketing, is pain avoidance. You said it was 2 times more powerful than positive motivation. Like, yes. How do we take that into consideration as marketers?
Yeah, so that's actually a great question, because marketers are fighting with one hand tied behind their backs. I mean, I don't know. Tell me if you've ever had this conversation with a company. It's like, well, you know, we don't say anything negative, and we don't say anything about our competitors. We're the nice brand, right? And that's a conversation ender. That means we're not going to do anything effective, because being nice never got you anything. I mean, our brains are tuned to survive. That means we're constantly scanning for trouble, things that are going to take us out or damage our survival prospects. So we're much more tuned to fear and loss of resources than we are to upside. I'll give you an example. Let's say, hey, what's your favorite ice cream flavor?
Pistachio.
Pistachio. Great. Okay. Romney, here's a bowl of pistachio ice cream. Go ahead and reach for it. But as you do, I'm just going to give you a little whack on the back of the hand with a hammer. What do you say?
No, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be a real pistachio lover to go for that.
Right.
So I know that pain's going to motivate you more than pleasure. Mm. And by not taking advantage of that, marketers are making a mistake. You need to amplify the pain. You know that workout motto, no pain, no gain? Well, it applies in marketing too. If you don't create a pain in me first, there's not going to be financial gain for you at the end of that interaction. So you really have to rub salt into the wound, say, what are the implications, all of the implications of staying on the course you're on? Ouch, that really hurts. Oh, that sucks to be you. And only then do you present your solution as a way to get rid of that pain. But if you didn't create a big pain in the first place, I'm not going to be motivated to move off of my comfortable spot.
That's so good. I mean, what do you do? What advice would you give to marketers who are in that situation where their boss is like, you know, we're in a nice brand. Is there a way to communicate pain in a nice way?
Yes and no. So a lot of companies say, well, we won't badmouth our competitors. Fine, I get that. Okay, but nothing is stopping you from saying, imagine life without our service or product. So if you're going to sell, a tooth straightening aligner trays like Invisalign, you don't say you're going to have, even teeth and everything and a great smile. Okay, that's what most of the advertisements do. But actually, it's much more effective to say, wow, those crooked teeth of yours must be like making it hard for you to get a date. And I mean, it must really crush your self-esteem. And man, do you often feel like a loser? Yeah. And only then say, hey, imagine if life wasn't like that. Well, it can be with Invisalign, okay, or something like that. So, but you have to create what are the full implications of not having our product or service in your life?
That's like very visual, like a crooked teeth. Like that's one way to communicate that is like a before and after snapshot.
Yes.
Like what are other ways to like communicate that pain? Like definitely words, but have you seen any other creative ways that you can communicate that pain?
Well, the format isn't important. The message is important. You can deliver this in a video, in a self scoring quiz on your website, in good email copy, or in a downloadable ebook. It depends on your situation. But you say, for example, let's use a business to business example. We're working with a staffing company. Say, who wants to hire a staffing company and pay a 50% markup on annual salary for anyone you hire? Nobody, right? But if you say, what's high staffing turnover costing you? Oh, you're losing expertise in your company. You're actually making your competitors stronger by sending them your best people that they're unhappy. You have crap morale and motivation and like a cancer growing inside of your company and all of this stuff, right? And it costs you much more money to replace a person and their lost productivity than it would to retain the best person or find the best person. So you see what I mean? Like you could just like dig at all the pain. So the point is to flesh out the full implications of them staying on their current course. And what's that going to cost you over the next 1 to 5 years? And then it's a really big ouch. And then it makes sense for me to do something about it. So it's not the format, it's staying on message and like really digging at the pain.
What I find fascinating is another benefit I see with that is like when you lead with that pain and they see what they can lose, they're more likely to say yes to a higher, like, oh, why would I pay 50% markup? And then when you show this, they're like, oh yeah, it's true. So you're actually maybe increasing their likelihood to pay a higher fee?
Absolutely. You're putting that floor under the value, the perceived value. Mm-hmm. And by the way, so to speak about specific packages, if you will, or content, I find that downloadable guides are really, really powerful. The 7 biggest mistakes when hiring new employees, okay? Now, you might only 2 or 3 of those might be talking about your staffing company in this example, right? But I'm fear-based. So it's like, ooh, I want to avoid that pain. I want to avoid those mistakes. I might know 2 or 3 of them, but you might give me others that I don't know about. So it has this dual purpose of amplifying the pain and also starting with a gift. So you as the company are giving them a gift of good knowledge and they trust you. Right? Nothing says the last page in that download can't be schedule a free consultation with your staffing advisor. You know, so there's a direct call to action, but you start with the gift of knowledge and start by a pain trigger.
What I also find fascinating with that, that's a great example. Thank you. I think I'm going to try that example sometime, one of my clients, but I'm finding this fascinating that this sounds like a a consultative sales process, like something that a really good salesperson would do, where they would like lay out like what they can lose and, you know, before they talk about the problem. Is that, are you finding that, you know, people with a good sales background actually end up becoming good marketers, or is that something that
well, I don't know about the crossover between sales and marketing, but this certainly applies in the sales world. There's a book. I can't say it's a good book because it's kind of uneven, but the principles are really solid. It's been around forever by a guy named Neil Rackham, and it's called Spin Selling. And spin is an acronym. So situation, find out the facts, problem, have some canned problems that, you know, suspected problems that you talk to them about. Implication, this is where you rub salt into the wound and already have prepared the full scope of their problems. And then need payoff, which is imagine what life would be like if you didn't have that problem anymore, okay? So it's a visualization. So you've taken them on the roller coaster from hell. You take them into the bowels of the netherworld and then back out into the light. And notice through that whole process, you haven't even talked about what you do. That's the power of it. Is then the solution is kind of like obvious at the end. It's like, yeah, we can make that pain go away and here's how we do it. But they don't care unless you trigger enough pain in them. So that's a very smart book in terms of selling any high value stuff, Spin Selling.
Really fascinating. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I couldn't remember what it was, but you remembered every single letter there because I've learned it a year ago and I completely forgot about it. Another thing that you talked about there, shift gears, is it's kind of related to the pain avoidance. Like you've said the pain, but one thing that you want to do once they said yes to your solution, you want to make it easy for them, because one of the things you found with the primal brain is that we're lazy. Like we're impatient and we like simple choices. It sounds like I'm downplaying human beings, but it's just, you know, that's just who we are, right?
No. I mean, look, when we talk about user experience design, have some background in that, you know, we talk about different loads on the users of a system, in this case, a visitor to a website. So the first is visual load. Can I find it with my eyes? Half of our brain is designed for processing visual information, so it's really efficient. Motor load is the next level up, which would require me to actually move my body voluntarily, like click on something or do a pull down on a menu. That's a higher ask. But the highest ask by far is what we call cognitive load. In other words, you're asking me to consciously think about something. So what's most scarce is attention. And that's what you have to lower and minimize. So if you can create a trigger that's easier for me to pull, I'll do it more frequently. BJ Fogg, who spoke at my Digital Growth Unleashed conference and keynoted, he runs the Stanford Persuasive Technology Lab. He's got this behavioral model. He says, for someone to take action, three things have to combine at the same time. You need the motivation to do something, the ability to do it, and a trigger in front of you so you can pull it. And so a lot of times we make the wrong trigger. I see websites, mobile websites, that have the phone number just listed on the site instead of a click to call link. That's stupid. What am I supposed to do? Remember the phone number, just open my phone app and type it in, or cut and paste and hope I do that right. So even the trigger itself, which is click versus do something more complicated, is preventing someone from doing something. So the easiest things to fix on your site are the triggers. Make them simple to execute.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. That's one of the things you mentioned in that presentation as well, that, you know, our brain is structured to do nothing. The default is to do nothing and conserve energy, right?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So behavioral economists have a fancy Latin term for it, the status quo bias. But basically, it's a recognition of the evolutionary reality that a quarter of our resting calories powers our brain. That's like three times as much as any other great ape. Yeah, we have a super energy intensive brain. So most of the time it's kind of on standby mode. It conserves energy because it is such an energy hog. And so again, you know, we're talking about motivating you either with upside or downside, but your enemy as a marketer is not your competitor. Your enemy as a marketer is me doing nothing, because I feel that that's a sunk cost and I don't have to invest any more energy into it. So why change course or think or do anything? So you have to overcome that inertia of staying on my current path. And the default is to do nothing. So our brain is like this ignoring, forgetting, doing nothing, lazy machine most of the time.
Man, that's such an insightful thing. Like your competitor is not your biggest threat. it's your customer, your user doing nothing, because that's a default.
Yeah. And by the way, you can use that to your advantage. So for example, some countries in Europe have the default for organ donation being an opt-in. Whereas in the US, like where I live in California, it's an opt-out. Whereas in the US, it's an opt-in. So I have to say, I want to be an organ donor. And as a result, organ donation rates on driver's licenses are only 15%. Whereas in some Scandinavian countries, and it's 90%, because they say you have to opt out if you don't want your organs donated. So it's obviously a clear social good to have organ donation, but they just made it easier. You do nothing and you're an organ donor. Congratulations.
Yeah, you're right. Like, that's such a good example with that.
And by the way, so you can do the same thing in your business. If you think about what are your powerful options, what are the most profitable things you can ask me to do? Are those the default? Are those the ones where I have to do nothing? Or if I have to even lift one finger, that's costing you money. And that's why subscription models are really powerful. Once I sign up, then I do nothing.
Yeah, that's right. It's funny you say that. Like, we're recording this in December and New Year's resolutions coming up. And I think that's what gym memberships do, is like they try to sign you up January so you forget you're paying $10, $20, or $30 a month to go to a gym.
Oh, man, I have a personal story of that. I used to belong to 24-hour fitness and I got in at a really good price, $5 a month. Okay. But yeah. And a long time ago, probably, before you were born, perhaps. I'm not going to say I'm old, but there it is. But I stayed with that membership for about 10 years and I maybe went a dozen times, but the thought of having it jump up to 50 if I canceled was just too much, you know? And so, oh man, yeah, the subscription models are really effective.
When we come back in just a moment, Tim shares how marketers can give the illusion of control to people to help them make the buying decision easier. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is an undiscovered gold mine for many advertisers. One thing I really love about advertising on LinkedIn is how you can target by very exclusive and specific criteria that you won't find anywhere else, such as company growth rates, so you can reach fast-growing organizations. Job seniorities, so you can target the decision makers and close deals quicker. Job titles, so you can focus your advertising specific to your ideal customer profile. Member skills, so you can find people with very specific skills and qualifications, and more. That's LinkedIn's competitive advantage. It's the world's largest professional networking site. LinkedIn allows you to reach more than 90 million senior level influencers, 62 million decision makers, and 10 million C-suite members. No other advertising platform can offer you that. And it's one of the many reasons why more than 78% of B2B marketers rate LinkedIn as the most effective social media platform at helping their organization achieve specific objectives. Whether you're looking to generate leads, drive website traffic, or build brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals quicker. So do business where business is done. Get a free $100 advertising credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign at linkedin.com/grow today, or find that link in the description. Enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Tim. That's really funny. Like, that's an interesting strategy. I'm not sure if it's even on purpose. Where, like, even my phone plan, it doesn't exist anymore. I signed up for it like 5 years ago. If I, Canadian mobile plans are terrible, but I'm paying $40 for like 10 gigs of data. But, you know, if I try to switch plans now, it's going to be $80 for like 5 gigs of data. I'm like, I'm not canceling this plan at all.
Oh, that's very deliberate. Have no doubt about that.
I want to shift gears one last time. And one of the other things you talked about is people's, they overvalue their things that they can control or really have influence over. And, you know, what is that? How can marketers take advantage of that? Or can you talk a little bit about that
insight? Yeah. This is a very powerful dynamic. It's kind of an ownership bias. So think about your great, 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 great grandfather in East Africa 200,000 years ago. You had a few tribal mates and wandering around, but basically you carry everything, right? And that's a lot. You're in the desert. You have to carry water, that slobbering baby, probably some weapons, clothing, You know, everything you carried was vitally important to your survival, and you had to expend energy just to carry it, right? So I'll use an example. If I found this sharp-edged flint rock, well, it might be good for skinning animals or as a weapon, you know, but I have to carry it. It's a rock, right? So maybe around the corner, there's a shale field with lots of those sharp flint rocks, or maybe I'm going into a desert with just sand and there are no more rocks like that. So it's like, it was a really important decision. The decision to own and carry something was really important. So we have this bias that anything we own is important. Now, we don't have the constraint of carrying things. We have cars, we have closets, storage units, garages, you know, all of these things. So we just keep collecting crap because we think it's important. But if we go back to that storage unit and look at all the stuff in it, you could easily replace it by going to the store without paying the tax. By the way, there's another great example, subscription service storage units without forever paying that big tax.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. How can marketers take advantage of that? And I'm really curious how, you know, let's go there first. I have a follow-up question there, but like, what is things that marketers can do to take advantage of
that? Sure. So when you, I'll give you a specific example where not even owning something, but trying it on for size or feeling that you have control over it gives you a sense, let me just tell you. So there's this raffle, this experiment, the social experiment. There's a raffle. Imagine there's 500 tickets. They cost $1 each and you can win a big prize. Okay. And they had two sets of people. One of them, they would hand them their raffle ticket after they bought it for $1. The others, they would let them pick it out of a fan of several raffle tickets. Okay. And then they went back and they pretended that somebody else needed to be in on the raffle. All the tickets were gone. And they asked people, how much would you sell your ticket back for? And the people that had their ticket handed to them would sell it for about $1.67, as I recall. So that 67 cents is the fun of playing, the chances of actually winning, the pain in the ass of having to transact twice, all of that, right? But here's the interesting thing. The people that got theirs picked out of, got to pick theirs out of a fan that selected their particular ticket wanted over $5 for theirs. So you see how heavily they were influenced by that action of customizing it or owning it or trying it on for size. You see the same thing with big lotto games. One of the most popular in California is the pick six, where you actually pick your numbers. Now, picking your numbers has nothing to do with your chances of winning, but people feel that sense of ownership. So anything that you can do to have people try it on, customize it, you know, mattress companies do this. Sleep on our mattress for 90 days. And if you don't like it, you know, just return it. You know, yeah, but what are you going to do with the old mattress? It's up there against the wall of your bedroom. You're looking at that ugly stained thing for 90 days. No, after a week, you're just going to toss it and sleep on the new one. So anything you can do to customize it, trial it, configure it. You know, when you go to a new car dealer, the first thing they say is, hey, let's go for a test drive. And you're so imagining that ownership. Yeah. What's it like to live with that and own it? So anything you can do to have people, even give people a false sense of control or customization, you should do that.
That's fascinating. You talked about the return thing. Like IKEA has like a 365-day return policy, mm-hmm. which is crazy. But like, you're right. Like once you built that furniture.
Oh, if you manage to build it properly. Yeah. That's like, there's always one or two of those expander screws missing, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, but like once you build it, like you've taken the time, you've maybe started putting stuff on it.
Yeah, exactly. You have skin in the game. And that's why you should always make your policies, returns, and guarantees as long as possible, maybe even lifetime. You ever return a garden hose? Everyone I buy at Home Depot's, you know, has gone bad on me eventually, and they all have lifetime guarantees. You think I'm going to schlep it there or save the receipt? No. I'm just going to get a new one. So make it so I don't have to think about it. Out of sight, out of mind. It's always good. You can always return it. Unconditional. Same thing goes with trials. If you have a trial, don't be stingy. If you have a trial of software, for example, is it worth it for me to do a 7-day trial? No. Give me a 60-day or 90-day trial. I mean, you're delaying the revenue recognition, but the chances of me actually staying with it and incorporating it into my daily habits are much higher. So the conversion rate's much higher. Don't be stingy with guarantees or trials.
That's so good. And it comes to the trials and software. maybe there's ways also to customize it as early as possible, whether that's uploading your logo or like
uploading your name. If you want, exactly. If you have some kind of freemium model and you want me to try it and then convert to a paid one, what you want to do as soon as I sign up is encourage usage and consumption of it. And email me is like, have you done this yet? Like, upload your first picture to your cloud storage, because if you track that stuff, the chances of me staying with your paid service once I upload just one picture is much higher.
Mm. Is there any other principle about the primal brain that really stands out for you? We've talked about, you know, human beings are not rational, we're lazy, and we like control, but like you covered a ton more stuff in your book and also your presentation, but like, is there any other ones that really for you is like, oh, this is something that marketers should be aware of and that they should really know about?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, pretty much the whole book, I want to share so much. It's very ambitious. It covers brain chemistry, memory, learning, sleep, gender differences, culture, storytelling. It's all in there, right? And technically, it's not a marketing book, but if you just read it through with how do I apply this to marketing mindset, you're going to get gold out of it, I promise you, because obviously that's my own background for a long time is in marketing. But another thing that I think is important to understand is that we're designed to spread culture. That's our big evolutionary bet. It's not adapting to each environment physically. It's spreading culture and learning from our surrounding tribe so we can be successful in our local environment. And that has a lot of implications for marketing, starting with who is your target audience? Most of us basically are like, well, my crap can be bought by anyone on the planet. Well, congratulations, it'll be remembered by nobody. You know, so you have to really resonate for your cultural tribe and know who they are. So you need to narrow your focus. One of the biggest mistakes marketers make is just being too broad, too generic. You should think of it as like, this needs to resonate for my target, and everyone else, I don't give a crap what they think about it. And I think there's not that discipline. Most marketers want to keep saying, and it works for this group and this group and this group. And that's a big mistake. So number one job, figure out your target. Number two job is figure out their culture, what they stand for, their belief systems. Because there's no such thing as objective reality. Or rather, we're going to take the same objective reality and run it through our cultural filters. I'll give you an example from the book. So let's say I tell you this objective story. The bullfighter stepped deftly aside as the bull charged him and thrust his sword between its shoulder blades from above, instantly striking its heart and killing it. Okay? That's an objective story, right? Now, if you're in Spain and you love bullfighting, this is a story of courage, of man versus nature, of excellence and being an impeccable warrior, right? Of training and dedication. But if you're belong to PETA, you know, people for the ethical treatment of animals, you think this is barbarism and torture and somebody's paying to watch it and allowing it to continue, but with their money, and it's disgusting and repugnant to you. Same objective story, but depending on your cultural tribe, you're going to experience it very differently. So again, the mistakes that marketers make is they start doing their offers and their messaging and all that crap up front. You have to understand your audience and their values and culture first. Then you can tailor your messages to them.
That's so good. Yeah, that's totally so true. Like, figuring that out. And one advantage of that is once you have that culture, you can build a community. And those, you know, once you have a community, they're emotionally attached to what you're doing or what you're offering. And it's very hard for them to leave you, right? It's like married. You're now married. You're in a relationship.
Do you have, what's your cell phone? Is it an iPhone or an Android?
Yeah, it is an iPhone.
Okay, well, you know, what if I told you that iPhones suck and they're always a couple of generations behind and they're proprietary and inflexible? Yeah. They're actually deleting features that are useful, right? That's reality. Sorry, Romley. I like to use an Android because I like to get work done. But by saying that, I probably just started a holy war with you, right? One of us
sounds
is
like
going
my brother.
Down, baby. No, but you're part of the Apple tribe, and you bought the religion, right? And you're drinking the proverbial Kool-Aid, right? So that's an example of how powerful it can be. Objective reality doesn't matter. I have a better camera. I'm a photographer, and I love what I can do with the Samsung. But it doesn't matter to you because you've bought it. You're aligned with the other. Oh, it's cooler to be an Apple person tribe.
It's so true. You saw, I was just joking. That's what my brother's like an Android fan and he just makes fun of me all the time. We get into this all, battles, but you're right. Like once you're in that tribe, like you don't want to be casted out. Like you don't want to be kicked out.
Yeah. So this is really tribal belonging is the most important thing. We're mammals and we need to be part of the herd for safety. That's a basic level of tribalism. But beyond that, human beings are the most social of all mammals by far. And all of our brains are designed to understand our place in the social universe of our tribe. So for us to be cast out, as you put it, is the worst thing possible. We can't survive on our own. And so we will fit in even if it means contorting reality. And you see this in the political discourse right now. I mean, basically people saying the earth is flat, you know, and if you say, well, the earth is not flat, I climbed up on the mast of the ship and look, I saw the curvature of the earth and I think it's a ball that we live on. Well, you know what they do to you if you did that, Romley? They'd throw you off the freaking mast. Because what you're doing is you're gumming up the works and you're not letting culture spread effectively. In order to do that, we have to ape what people around us are saying and how they're acting. And if you don't do that, you get thrown out of the tribe and that has deadly survival consequences from an evolutionary standpoint.
Dang, that's so good. Yeah, it's absolutely so true. I want to start wrapping up and, you know, we've talked a lot about so many different things in this past half hour, but if you can give one or two pieces of advice that you'd like to give to marketers about anything, it could be about something we talked about or something that we haven't talked about yet. What would be that one or two piece of advice you'd like to give?
Boy, I think the big theme for me is, you know, we started with this, is why is psychology important in terms of being a good marketer? It's not about the technology, especially in digital marketing. Everything's infinitely measured, but we have all these tools and Twitter this or hologram suppositories tomorrow. I don't know what the technology is going to be, but none of that stuff matters. It's not about the technology. It's about the psychology. And so if you focus on the durable, evergreen stuff that's not going to ever change, at least not in your lifetime, that's what's going to make you a good marketer. Understand what we're trying to persuade, which is the human brain. And then how we persuade it, those are tactics. That nothing more, nothing less. So if you want a durable career as a marketer, focus on the evolutionary psychology. Mm,
so good. And just one final question. Where can people find out more about your product and your book?
Well, if they're interested in me, as you know, I'm a keynote speaker all over the world, at least after COVID and before COVID, or my digital marketing services, including website reviews and executive marketing advisory for top executives, go to timash.com. If you want to find out more about the book, I have ebook versions and the audiobook narrated by me. And pre-release autograph copies available at primalbrain.com. So timash.com and primalbrain.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Tim. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Romley.
Well, that's it for this episode. I want to remind you to download the free growth cheat sheet that Tim, all the actionable tips that Tim shared on this episode for free at growtoday.fm/136. Seriously, why take notes when you can just take mine away? I've already put in the work. And once again, you can get it at gotoday.fm/136 or find the link in the description. I also want to thank the sponsor for this episode again. They help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts like them on this show. Thanks to LinkedIn. Now LinkedIn is an undiscovered goldmine for many advertisers. One thing I really love about advertising on LinkedIn is how you can target by very exclusive criteria that you will not find anywhere else, such as company growth rate, job seniority, job titles, skills, and more. So whether you're looking to generate leads, drive website traffic, and build brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals. Now, for you, my listeners, you get $100 free credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign. Get it for free at linkedin.com/growtoday. Please also support me in these three easy ways. First, you can tell a friend about this episode. Like if you found this episode with Tim valuable, Slack a friend, text a friend, call them. You can send them an email. You can just let them know. I would really appreciate that. This is how podcasts grow, is through word of mouth. Second, if you're not already part of my email list, go to growtoday.fm and join it now. I email all my subscribers any future Grow Today cheat sheet, so you don't have to keep coming back and you don't miss any ones. I also update my subscribers about any personal or professional updates that I have, including I let my subscribers know before anyone else that I was writing a book, and I gave them free digital access before anyone else. If you want to keep up to date with me and you think I'm cool, I'm a cool guy, join the mailing list. I do keep people updated about what's happening with me. And third, if you found this show valuable, I would kindly request that you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. This is one way that other people can find out more about this show, is through reviews on that platform. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Rambly John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing.